Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. I am Connie, along with Meg316. And tonight she is going to tell us about the murder of Joanne Witt.
It was weird because she called me that because it's the date. She just told me that. But at dinner tonight, my boyfriend and I were talking about Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold 316, right?
Yeah. Or
is that right? Yeah. And how he got his name, which apparently, because he was married to a British lady, she told him to drink his tea or it was going to get stone cold. And he was like, inspiration, because he was watching it. I don't know. Told me all about it.
He's so dumb. He should have named it Stone Cold T16.
Stone Cold T16. Only we think that's funny.
I would like to welcome everyone to Drunk True Crime with Connie and Meg.
Tonight,
we are not drunk. But Austin no. T16 is what I'm going to put on a t-shirt.
You should put it on a teacup.
It just keeps... Jinx! It's the gift that keeps on giving!
Oh my gosh. I can't wait to hear the commentary on this. All right. 47-year-old Joanne Witt lived with her daughter, Tyler Marie, in El Dorado Hills, California, a suburb of Sacramento. She worked as an assistant engineer, the Department of Transportation for El Dorado County. Tyler, her daughter, was 14 and entering her freshman year at Oak Ridge High School. By all accounts, Tyler was described growing up as a sweet girl. But as she grew older, the relationship between Tyler and Joanne became contentious. And I read reports that their relationship had been rocky for quite a long time. It's all hearsay, right? It's just what people have said. It's all alleged. But there were rumors that Joanne had a drinking problem. At one point, she had lost custody of Tyler because of abuse. Like, this was not an easy relationship for them. In December 2008, during her first year of high school, 14-year-old Tyler began spending time at a local coffee shop called Habit. It was here that she met 19-year-old Stephen Paul Culver. Stephen had just started his first year of college at Folsom Lake College. He was also working pretty much every day of the week at a Mexican restaurant. Apparently, when he was a kid, he had a speech impediment that made him sound like he was from Boston, so everyone called him Boston. And it just stuck.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Which is like kind of mean, but hilarious.
It sounds very like teenage boy.
It is. This whole episode is teenage angst. Teenage angst.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
Yeah, it's going to suck. So Boston, Stephen, same guy. By January of 2009, Stephen and Tyler were hanging out every weekend. Their friendship began to evolve. And remember, Stephen's 19, Tyler's 14.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And I was going to do a friendly reminder that you're not mature. He's a creep.
Yes, exactly. There's no amount of maturity that makes that work. So they're constantly talking on the phone with each other. And Tyler kind of began to like depend on Stephen. He was like her confidant about her tumultuous relationship with her mom. And Tyler was like, it's worse when she's drinking. And they fell in love. Okay. Quote unquote.
I don't like where this is going.
I know. The two became a couple on February 23rd, 2009. And in March of 2009, that connection between Stephen and Tyler became physical. Tyler wrote in her diary, "We will love each other past death. I know I will never stop loving him," which sounds like something a 14-year-old girl would write.
Oh, for sure. I have a almost 14-year-old boy, and that's pretty much spot on.
Just all drama. Stephen lived with his dad, But when Culver began looking for a place of his own, his dad had decided to move out of state and he was trying to sell his house. So Stephen was like, all right, I'm going to find my own place. His 14-year-old girlfriend was like, well, my mom is trying to rent the extra bedroom out in our house. You should rent the extra bedroom.
Oh, no.
And Joanne was looking for someone to rent the extra room in her home to make some extra income. But when Tyler suggested Stephen, she was like, I don't know about that. Tyler told her mother that Culver was gay and that their relationship was that, no, we're just friends. He's like my brother. I'm like his sister. There's no relationship here. He just needs a place to live because his dad is moving out of state. And that was not true. They were dating. But Culver had been in a relationship with a man before, so it's not totally untrue. Against the advice of her parents, Joanne allowed Stephen Culver to move into a room in their home, paying rent of $500 a month.
That's actually kind of a lot for a room, man. Oh, wait. It's in California. Never mind.
Yeah, it's a room in California. It's like, no utilities, just...
Yeah, you're right.
Great deal for him. Also, then he gets to, you know, sneak around with his teenage girlfriend. What's not exciting about that?
Yeah, true.
And initially, the arrangement went pretty well. Like, the couple was hiding their romance from her mom, and they were, like, sneaking kisses when she wasn't there, when she was around the corner. But it was only weeks before they were caught. On May 13th, 2009, Joanne found a bottle of lubricant, sex toys, and some weed and paraphernalia hidden in an unused portion of her home. It was like the HVAC closet that was across from Stephen's bedroom. She was upset. She's like, ew, what is this lube and sex toys doing in my HVAC closet? And she confronted Stephen, and he was like, oh, no, I'm just holding those for a friend. Which is fine. Like, you're holding their weed, but like, why are you holding your friend's lube and their sex toys? Real cool. Ultimately, Joanne allowed him to stay in her house until the very next day when she came home early and caught the two in a compromising position. Joanne had gone. What is this, amateur hour? Joanne had gone into Tyler's room to look for her. She didn't find her. She knocked on Stephen's door and heard scuffling, but he wouldn't come to the door. When he finally did, he was shirtless. He was just wearing pants, and she was suspicious. So she opened his closet and found her daughter in the closet, naked, holding like a yellow sports bra against herself. The 19-year-old told Joanne about their relationship. He admitted to her that he knew it was illegal and he knew it was wrong. And she agreed to not call the police as long as he stopped seeing Tyler and he had to move out of her house immediately.
I feel like that's pretty solid.
Yeah, like that's fair. Like, hey, it sucks that you guys did this, but if you stop seeing each other and you get the hell out of here, I won't tell the police that you're committing statutory rape. And he agreed. But that makes it sound like kind of cordial that he was like, oh, yes, thank you for this opportunity to not go to jail. But the next day, Joanne had two of her male friends from work. It's Vincent Catapano and Thor Larson. They both worked with her at the Department of Transportation. They came to the house when Stephen was coming to pick up his stuff. And Catapano allegedly moved Culver's belongings to the sidewalk and warned him not to contact anyone within the Witt family. And he threatened him and was like, I'll deal with this East Coast style if I have to.
Oh, well.
So Stephen's response was, yes, sir. And so now they're like, okay, legal action. Some East Coast dude is going to threaten to take care of him. Do you think they stopped talking?
No.
No. No. Youth. Days later, Tyler disappeared and would not answer her mother's phone calls. Fearing the worst, Joanne called police and reported the relationship between her daughter and Stephen. But Tyler actually was not with him that night. She had been at a friend's house and was just apparently out of cell reception area. But still, like, she had went and talked to the police, so there's an investigation now. and authorities confronted Tyler, and Tyler immediately lied to them. She said, "No, no, no, Culver is like my big brother. I was naked in his closet because I was asking for his opinion on clothes." Like, she wanted his opinion
on that yellow sports bra.
She wanted his opinion on a dress. And police called Culver at his job and told them the same story. He did, however, admit that he and Tyler liked each other, but claimed that those feelings had never turned physical. They had no direct evidence and two denials from both of the parties involved. So now there's police involvement. You think it forced them to stop seeing each other? No.
No.
No. Not only did they continue to sneak around to see each other, but Joanne found Tyler's journal or diary, and it contained very intimate and very descriptive details of the couple's sexual encounters and the information about their relationship. They were calling each other their fiancé so that they could say that they had been engaged for years when they were finally able to get married. Her journal also had entries about Joanne. She wrote, "My mother is driving me insane. I can't stand her company for more than 5 minutes. I hate her." And she detailed elaborate fantasies about Joanne dying in a car accident.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Joanne contacted law enforcement again, and she filed statutory rape charges. She turned over the journal as evidence, and when questioned by detectives, Culver again said, "No, no, no, there's no romantic relationship here. There's no sexual activity." After meeting with law enforcement and turning over that journal, after that, Joanne took Tyler to dinner and was like, "Hey, I filed charges against Steven." And Tyler showed no reaction, even though Joanne was like, "He's going to be in real trouble." It wasn't until Tyler learned that she had given police her journal that she reacted. And immediately she was distressed.
Yeah.
She
details everything.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like writing all the details of every single thing in this diary that now the police have. So she's calling Steven over and over and over, just like trying to get him to like come to her. And he did. He came to her house and the two spoke and they were like, "We should run away to San Francisco and commit suicide together. This is the plan." Very Romeo and Juliet.
You don't
like that. That was the inspo for it.
Oh my gosh.
Is you know that what? They
my
were
mom's
gonna
being a bitch. I'm gonna and yeah, she's our, not. She's being a
our
mom.
Families won't let us be together, so let's
I'm gonna we're let's go die by suicide. Oh, that's mm-hmm. dumb.
On the evening of June 11th, 2009, Tyler poured her mother a drink and added a large amount of sleeping medication. The couple then exchanged several phone calls. Tyler was giving Steven the status of Joanne, how like what was she drinking that night? How much was she drinking? Is she still awake? And a little bit before midnight, Steven met Tyler at the Witt house. Joanne Witt was asleep in her bedroom. On the morning of June 12, 2009, the couple left the Witt home after stabbing Joanne to death in her sleep.
Whoa, what? I was not expecting that. I mean, I was expecting the two of them to murder her, but I was not expecting like them to put her to sleep and then be like, "Hey, you know what? Let's go ahead and do this."
That is exactly what they did. They put her to sleep and then they stabbed her to death. The next morning, they drove to Steven's father's empty house where they showered and used the fireplace to burn their clothes. They then went to a local library where they slept in Steven's vehicle in the parking lot. When they woke up, they got Starbucks, they bought some food, and they stopped at Home Depot to buy rat poison. Because the two were planning on spending their last day in El Dorado Hills with friends before driving to San Francisco for the weekend. At the end of the weekend, the two would partake in a Shakespearean dual suicide. They were going to eat the cake that they had laced with rat poison and commit suicide together in San Francisco. The two went to their friend Matt Widman's house before embarking on this journey to San Francisco, and both Culver and Witt dyed their hair black while they were there. they left to meet other friends. And with those friends, they purchased some marijuana and some cocaine and some ecstasy. And then they went back to Culver's house. Well, his dad's house, that no one was there. Steven and Tyler made ramen noodles, and they discussed whether or not they should tell their friend, Matt, what had happened the night before. Steven opted to tell Matt. He explained that the reason why Joanne Witt hadn't been calling Tyler was because he had stabbed her to death the night before. He even had the bloody knife in his car to prove it. By 10 p.m. Friday night, the couple had taken Woodman back to his house and then left for San Francisco. No one had heard from Joanne Witt on Friday, June 12th, 2009, but she had taken off work unexpectedly in the past to deal with her daughter. Just all of the stuff that was happening. She was like, hey, I can't work. I have to deal with Tyler. There's stuff going on.
Yeah.
And Vincent, her friend at work, Vincent Catapano, thought that Joanne and Tyler were going camping that weekend. So he was not surprised that his calls went unanswered. But when Joanne didn't show up on Monday, Catapano started to worry. He told Joanne's boss that she had been having trouble at home and she wasn't returning his calls. So they together called the police and asked for a welfare check. Joanne's father, Norbert Witt, was called to the scene.
Aww.
Norbert let police into the home, and as they climbed the stairs to the master bedroom, they discovered a grisly scene. Joanne Witt was in a pool of her own blood, covered with a SpongeBob SquarePants blanket. She had been stabbed roughly 20 times around the neck and chest, and she had been there for days. Tyler and Steven were immediately deemed persons of interest, and an APB was put out for them. Local media go ahead.
Did they think they wouldn't be immediate persons of interest? Like,
I think they knew that they were going to be, and that's why they decided to commit. We're going to commit suicide. But if they were going to do that, then her death was unnecessary, right?
Yeah. Yeah. What is the point?
If they're mad that they can't be together, so they're going to die to be together, no need to kill Joanne. Other than that is the person preventing them from being together.
Yeah.
So local media descended upon the scene, and photos of this young couple were broadcast all over California. The couple checked into a Holiday Inn in downtown San Francisco that weekend. They did some sightseeing. They did some drugs. They were writing suicide notes in their room, which they would later send to Matt Widman in a package. And that's important to remember. But when it came time for them to actually commit suicide, they were having a very hard time. They mixed rat poison into red velvet cake. They mixed rat poison into Fruit Loops, but they couldn't eat enough to kill themselves. And then they were like, we're going to cut ourselves with razors, but the blades were too dull and Steven couldn't stand how badly it hurt. And then Culver was like, well, we should jump off of the roof of this hotel. But Tyler said that she was afraid of heights. So their plan essentially fell apart. Instead, they walked away. They took San Francisco's subway, the BART, as far south as they could. And then they just started walking through the night. They would stop to rest every couple.
They had put the alert out. Never mind.
Yeah. So they just started walking and they would just stop to rest every couple of hours. And then on the morning of June 17th, 2009, as Witt and Culver walked south on El Camino Real into the town of San Bruno, an off-duty South San Francisco police officer spotted them. He called in the sighting and watched the couple kiss and cross the street into the San Bruno Town Center Mall, where they were arrested. She was like, you murdered someone. Don't go to the mall. It's just youthful stupidity at its clearest.
It is definitely. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And I'm not saying like everyone is dumb in their youth. I mean, we all kind of are. But like this is the peak. This is as dumb as you can get.
Yeah.
So they were arrested. And then the package that they had sent to Matthew Widman with their suicide notes in it, among other things, arrived. And he immediately took it to police. And he gave them a detailed account of their confession that they had told him. All of those things were used as evidence against the couple. And it was pretty definitive. In the package, there was also a story written by Tyler entitled The Killer and His Raven, in which a young man and his love are kept apart by the teen girl's mother.
Ew.
The story's climax is that the couple murders their meddling mother at around 1 in the morning. This is a direct quote from the story. At round 1 in the morning, the girl snuck the boy into her house and he stabbed her in her sleep, killing her and freeing themselves.
That's weird, because that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, why would you write a story about that? That's not fiction. And then a letter from Culver to his friends apologized for his sinful escape and said, "Our souls are tainted. We shall be awaiting our fate in the afterworld." An El Dorado court ruled that Tyler Witt would stand trial as an adult, not a juvenile, and she took a plea deal. Tyler would plead guilty to first-degree murder and agree to testify against Stephen if prosecutors believed her testimony was truthful. Her charge will be reduced to second-degree murder. And the reduction in charge would mean the difference between parole and eligibility in 15 years versus 25 years. So if she gave her testimony and they were like, yep, she's telling the truth, she would get charged with second-degree murder, and then she could get parole in 15 years. On May 17th, 2011, in the El Dorado County Courthouse in Placerville, California, a packed courtroom gathered for opening statements. Prosecutor Lizette Souter told the jury that they would hear a case about a 19-year-old man and a 14-year-old girl and their love affair, and that this love affair led to the violent, almost to the point of sadistic murder of her mother. All of the evidence and admissions pointed to Stephen Culver as the person who violently and maliciously stabbed Joanne Witt to death to get rid of a key witness in the statutory rape case against him, which is a pretty damning opening statement.
Yeah.
Culver's defense attorney, Dane Wiener, painted a different version. In the defense's telling, Tyler, who is a 14-year-old girl, was a temptress, and she was a mastermind behind the death of her mother. They said that when Culver arrived at the Witt home that night, Tyler held a knife dripping with blood, and she admitted to Culver that she had killed her mom. Culver had covered up the body with the SpongeBob blanket and later told their friends that he had stabbed Joanne in an attempt to protect Tyler. But Tyler's diary kind of betrayed those murderous feelings she said she had for her mother.
Yeah.
And so the jury would have to hear all of her friends like recount how many times Tyler said that she wanted to kill her mom or she wanted her mom dead. But then they pointed out that the couple's intention was to commit joint suicide, so killing Joanne Witt was unnecessary.
Yeah.
So it was just this circular mess. When she was questioned, Tyler just kind of like played with her hair and she politely answered questions from the prosecution. Tyler outlined the plan to kill her mother so that she couldn't call police when the couple fled to San Francisco. She talked about how initially she tried to drug Joanne's drink with vitamins because her mom didn't have any Valium left. And then, yeah, I know. And then she talked about how Stephen arrived at the house with a 10-inch chef's knife that he had stolen from his job at the Mexican restaurant. She said that they went upstairs to Joanne's bedroom together, but when she saw Culver taking a few like practice chops in the air, like when he was like practicing how he was going to stab her, that she felt like she couldn't do it. She said, "I couldn't do it. I couldn't go inside." So she stood in the hallway and said that she put her hands on her ears and closed her eyes and hummed to drown out the sounds of the murder happening in the next room.
So she really just dimed him out.
Yes, absolutely. And then the defense cross-examined and had Tyler recount years of the physical altercations she had had with her mother. And she had also had various attempts at running away. At one point, they were like, "Who's Toby?" And if you're also like, "Wait, Toby?
Yeah, who is Toby? I haven't heard of Toby."
Mm-hmm. After they asked that, Tyler explained that Toby is a demon from hell that lived inside of her, and that Alex was an angel who also lived inside of her. She said it was three souls crowded in one body. Tyler stated it matter-of-factly, and she said that in times of stress, she would black out and Toby would take over to deal with whatever was stressing me.
That's convenient.
Uh-huh. Culver told the jury his version of the night Joanne Witt died. He said that when he arrived at Tyler's home that night, her clothes were stained red and she had a bloody knife in her hand. He claimed that she said, "I did it for us. I did it. I finally did it. Mom is gone forever." But prosecutors asked whether the motive to kill Joanne Witt was stronger for Steven than it was for Tyler, because he faced jail time if Joanne continued to press those statutory rape charges against him.
Yeah.
The verdict was revealed on June 15, 2011, after less than 4 hours of deliberation and exactly 2 years after Joanne Witt's corpse was discovered. And keep in mind, Tyler's only 16 at this point now.
Yeah.
The jury found Stephen Culver guilty of first-degree murder with special circumstances of lying in wait and of killing a witness to statutory rape. The special circumstances rendered Culver ineligible for parole.
Oh, wow.
So he went to jail for life. No eligibility for parole. Tyler was sentenced to 15 years to life, and she was incarcerated in Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla, but she was granted parole on August 26, 2022. So she's no longer in prison, and Culver is still incarcerated at California Healthcare Facility in Stockton, California.
Sometimes I do not realize how in sync we are.
Why?
And then we do blind episodes where we don't know which each of us is covering.
And then they're both like family related.
Yeah.
People killing their parents. I thought that when you started telling yours, and I was like, oh, we're doing the same thing.
Yeah. As soon as you started, I was like, wait a second.
What have we done?
Obviously, their relationship was inappropriate, but I do think that Tyler preyed on, I don't want to say preyed, but she really went in on, used his unhealthy like obsession with her and like his desire to like, I really want to be with you to like.
Well, I think they're probably encouraging each other.
Absolutely.
Like it's, what is it? Your frontal cortex, your frontal cortex isn't fully formed until you're 25. They're like, you shouldn't make any big decisions until you're at least 25. And I kind of agree with that. I've said it maybe not on here before, but I've talked about it before. Sure. It's I feel like when you're in that age group, and it's hot. I'm not saying it's not wrong. It is wrong for like 19-year-olds and 14-year-olds to be dating, right? Like it's technically illegal. But, and I'm not... I'm not making excuses for anyone. I can see how that is hard. Like when you're 18 and 19 and you just got out of high school and you feel like you're still in this like group of teenagers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. I can see how the lines would become blurred there. And so I could see the conflict that Joanne was probably facing where she's like, hey, you guys can't do this. Just leave each other alone and we'll call it square.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that, you know?
No, not at all.
And they had the opportunity to. It wasn't like, okay, they had multiple opportunities to be like, okay, we've both said it's no good. Your mom said no. Like, we have to put this to the side. Instead, they just kept trying to make it happen.
And what's weird is, like you said, like, they had agreed to, okay, we're going to take our own lives. You did not need, so do that. Like, do that instead of killing your mom. Like, I don't understand that. That whole part is like, that is, like you said, youthful ignorance, because that's unnecessary step.
It's an unnecessary step. It's just like, it's revenge for no reason, because they're trying to, what, keep you away from your one true love. That's definitely not your one true love. If you have to, like, if you feel like you have to kill someone to be with another person, like, that's not love.
Yeah.
Like, if it was love, you could stand back and watch from afar for 5 years until she was 18 yeah. years old.
It doesn't matter what book talk and all these like smutty books tell you. That is not love.
No.
And this is coming from someone who loves a good smut book, but like that's like a, I'll do anything. I'll kill for you. I won't. Nope.
Like, please don't.
Yeah, don't. That's embarrassing. Like, what if you get caught? That is so embarrassing.
Then I look crazy and you look, and I look like I like a crazy person. I don't want that for me.
No, my stock goes down for the rest of my life if I'm associated with you.
If I'm associated with a sociopath.
Like, ew. Yes.
Yeah.
Just run away like normal 14-year-olds. What the fuck? And the 20 stabs is such overkill.
It's so many. So many. I was just like, what?
I hope my kids never tried to.
I know. Doesn't it make you think about that? You're like,
yeah, we just did two episodes back to back. Absolutely.
Kids try them with. I'm like, are my kids going to hold the things that I've said and done, like maybe not the best against me for my entire life until they murder me when they're 14 or 22 before their frontal cortex is developed?
I saw this thing about how you can't. How banks are, you can't like graduate from high school with no job and a bank be like, here, you can have a $100,000 loan for a house, but you can at the same age with no job take out that much money in student loans. And they're like, hey, you're 17, 18. We are trusting you to decide what you want to do for the rest of your life forever.
Figure it out.
Here's some money that you don't understand what you're doing, but you have to pay back.
No, this is a good segue because I've been thinking about this a lot because, like, I went to school when I was old, right? Like, I was older than people who, like, are in college at the same time I was. I was 30, and I cannot imagine, like, the dedication and, like, time it would have taken me at 18 to do what I did at 30. Like, I needed that time of, like, working and figuring out my life to be able to be a successful college student. And I think it's great if you can go into college at 18 and graduate at 22 with your degree and like you knew what you wanted to do and you handled it. Like, that's awesome. But that couldn't be me. Could not have been me.
I think that because I'm the same way. Like, I finished school like later than, you know, a lot of people in our class. But it was, I feel like because I struggled, I worked those shitty jobs. I did jobs that I hated. It made me appreciate it that much more when I have a job that I'm like, dude, this rocks.
Exactly. And, you know, something I noticed, like, I like my career now. Like, I like dentistry. I enjoy it a lot. But I find, or I've noticed, and I'm not talking shit about anyone, that for me, who worked their way up, right? They started, like, doing shitty jobs and worked my way up until I like had learned some shit and I could run some shit. Like, the way people complain about their job, I'm like, do you guys not see like how good we have it? Like,
yeah,
this job is like, we're coasting right now and you guys are complaining about like stuff that is like, it doesn't matter, like taking out trash or like, oh, we're so busy. I'm like, yeah, it makes it go faster. Why? It's good. Like, just roll with it.
That's how I like when people complain and bitch that like HR for like the government's not paid enough. And I'm like, dude, I could get paid less and I would still do this because I'm not on my feet for an entire surgery day. I'm not like essential when all my family is at home, you know, when everything shuts down inevitably again. I'm not getting home at 5:30 to like immediately go to soccer practice to get up at 6 a.m., 5 a.m. the next day and do it all over.
Yeah.
Like, no.
It's like, also, I'm not getting paid like nothing just because I work at like a store, you know,
yeah.
like that. And I have the opportunity to like provide care for people and talk to people and like have people respect my opinion. And my paycheck doesn't depend on like how many commissions I got in a week, you know, like how many things I could sell, like, or whether or not I retained like employees or if, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, I don't know. I don't ever like outwardly say anything, but I feel a little annoyed when people complain about just like normal work stuff. Like, yes, obviously there's stuff that sucks. Like, there's going to be situations.
No one likes going to work every single day. You're going to have days where you're like, dude, fuck this job. I'm going to torch it. But like,
but you like you find the good in it and you're like, okay, yeah, we can get through this. We do another day. And it's hard for me when I hear people like complaining about things. And I'm like, that's not that bad. Like, that's not that big of a deal. It's just this. We just handle it and we move on to the next thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because you dealt with like shitty retail customers for so long that you're like, it does not matter what happens here. This is better. It is.
That's exactly what it is. And I think about that. I'm like, I did like, and I know, like, of course I have patients that are not ideal patients, but I have never had anyone yet like make me cry because they didn't get half off of a t-shirt.
Yeah. Exactly.
So instead, like, maybe that's just age too. Like, maybe I'm just better at taking like shit off of people, but I don't know. I was thinking about that earlier this week. So you stoked the fire within me.
I'm glad to do so. I will say one final thing about your case is I hate, it's so awful because both of them had such a life ahead of them. That is like such a huge.
But don't you remember being like 14, 15, 16 and feeling like everything was like, this is it. This is all I have. This is the end of all of it. If I don't do this, then I do nothing.
It's funny that she was willing to let her mom be murdered by this man and like help facilitate it. And then immediately, like, she's like, I have to take my life by suicide because I can't live with you until we get caught. And then I'm going to rat your ass out. Like, sorry, man.
And then it's like, actually, I decided I do want to live, which was evident because they could not.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh my gosh, I can't live without you.
I did not kill my mom. He killed my mom.
I've never done anything ever. I love you.
I have never done anything wrong in my life, as you can tell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's a good place to stop.
I'm fine with it.
We're good with it. You got two episodes. More coming. More's coming.
We're gonna keep rolling this time.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Gruesome, Horrific, True Crime.
We love you, beautiful strangers. And if you love us too, here are some ways that you can support Gruesome. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or a 5-star rating on Spotify. This helps other true crime connoisseurs find us. Follow us at Gruesome Podcast on Instagram or TikTok and talk to us on our posts.
Join the Patreon. Sign up to join our True Crime Sticker of the Month Club and gain access to bonus episodes and exclusive Patreon perks. Or if a one-time donation is more your thing, we have a Venmo at Gruesome Podcast and a PayPal via our email, gruesomepodcast@gmail.com.
Speaking of which, we love hearing from you. It seriously makes our whole life. So send us your questions, comments, suggestions, or just ask our opinion on whether that person you met on Tinder is a serial killer or not.
Tune in next week, and don't forget, lock your windows, lock your doors, and on Wednesdays,
we're gruesome.
Bye.
Bye.